The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'd like to tell a Buddhist fable, and it's the story of a young person who decides to become free of all the burdens and weight, challenges the person's had. And so the person packs a sack for the trip and fills it with all the things that are thought to be needed and throws the sack over the shoulders and begins walking out across the land to look for some way to find some freedom. And the bag is heavy, and so it's slow going, and it's a strain to carry, and a lot of tiredness sets in, tension in the body from carrying this heavy sack. But, you know, he's determined and keeps walking because the goal is noble and great. And at some point, meets another traveler, a wise person, who walks along for a while and finds out what this person's up to, and then says, well, there's an easy way to drop all the weight that you have in your life. Drop your sack. And so the person puts it down. And lo and behold, it suddenly feels light and easy to walk and feels kind of liberated. And then this young person says to the wise person, is that all there is to put down the burden? No, now you have to pick up that which has no weight. And at that moment, the wise person vanishes. There's no explanation. What do you pick up that has no weight? So the person kept walking, now without the sack, and after a while came across an old person who was struggling under the weight of bringing groceries home. And so this young person picked up the groceries for the old person and carried them home and to the person's home, and was surprised by how light the mind felt. I'm light. There's a feeling of lightness. But still didn't understand, so kept walking, and after a while came to a place in the path where a big boulder had fallen in the middle of the path, so that certainly people could walk around the boulder, but the people who came with carts couldn't get by. So the person spent a few hours taking this heavy boulder and rolling it, moving it out of the way, but was surprised by how light things were felt. And moved along for a little while longer, and came to a place where there was, someone who was injured and couldn't walk. So the person picked the person up and carried them to a place to get medical care, and was surprised by the kind of a lightness that was there. And thought, this is strange. How is all this lightness happening? And then discovered that the lightness was in the mind. It certainly had picked up kind of physically heavy things, but had not picked up any mental heaviness. And the freedom from the burdens, this dropping of burdens that the young person had searched to do, was not the burdens of the world, but the burdens that of the world carried in the mind, how they're carried in the mind. That's where the weight is. And so in Buddhism, there's this idea that there are all these burdens that we carry, and unnecessarily, putting unnecessarily weight on the mind. And those are the burdens we want to learn to put down. In fact, one of the descriptions of enlightenment is putting down the burdens. It's a nice description of enlightenment. Maybe it's not, it's not like, doesn't have the promise of cosmic light or, cosmic joy or something that people have great ideas of what enlightenment is. But just putting down the burden, I think it's beautiful. So what are some of the mental burdens that people carry? And there are four that can be talked about. One is the burden of pleasure and comfort. The second is the burden of beliefs. The third is the burden of duties and obligations. And the fourth is the burden of self. So why are these burdens? The idea of the burden of pleasure and comfort is usually not a burden in and of itself, feeling pleasure and comfort, but some people pursue wanting pleasure, wanting comfort, in a way that's exhausting, that takes a lot of effort and time. Some people are quite attached to these things. Some people feel that their life is only successful if they have pleasure and comfort. And it doesn't take a lot of analysis to consider how many people, certainly in our society, who are of relative means compared to a lot of the else places in the world, how much time and effort is taken in the pursuit of pleasure and comfort that's not recognized. It just kind of considered normal part of life. So one way I think of thinking about it is that in our society here, not everyone for sure, but in this peninsula, Bay Area where we live, and I suspect that a good percentage of the people who come to IMC, that they probably have cars that are cost more than absolutely necessary for transportation to get around. They probably have homes that maybe they're a little bit bigger than they absolutely need to have to live a comfortable life in a home. They probably buy new clothes a little bit more often than are needed than just to be a comfortable, content life. They probably buy foods and more that are a little bit of a luxury, aren't really needed, but a little bit more pleasure and a little bit more for comfort and pleasure than just eating your basic necessities. But it's sometimes not seen that these are extra. They're just like seen as requirements for our life and what's needed. But if we see at least some of that, a percentage of this as being extra and the pursuit of pleasure and comfort, aesthetic, nice, pleasing situation, and then consider the time it takes to acquire the means to do that, the work and the pursuit of work and maybe the education that's required. And not a few people that I talk to because I talk to people wide ranges, not a few people are eagerly looking forward to retirement. And it seems like the idea of their work is not something that brings them a lightness. It's like they're ready for putting it down. But, they have, some of their concern for working longer is to have a certain degree of well-being or pleasure and comfort so that they can, have what they think they need. So I don't know what you think of this analysis, but hopefully it points a little bit to the idea that pleasure and comfort is a bigger part of people's lives than most people recognize. It's not just kind of, eating a lot of chocolate all the time or getting a massage or it's kind of built into so much of the fabric of in our contemporary modern local society, people's lives. So it doesn't have to be a mental burden, these things, but it can be if there's strong attachment to it and feeling of need and requirement. I need to have this. I need to have something, the latest and greatest. I don't know if I did, but my cell phone last month happened to end up in a river. When the raft it was in tipped over in that river, I was not in the raft, I was on a different raft, but my cell phone was in that raft. So that was kind of the end of my cell phone. And so I came back and kind of wanted to get a new phone. So I looked around and there was the advertisements and what was in the news was like the latest and the greatest. It was like, wow. And they were expensive. And I thought, well, what do I need these expensive phones for? The phone I had, I think I probably used, I don't know, 0.5% of its capacity for the little things I use it for. So I went to the store and bought a brand new phone that was a model from 3 or 4 years ago. It was still newer than the phone I had. But I saved so much money. And I still feel delighted at the pleasure of this thing. But I don't have the pleasure of the greatest and the latest. And, you know, and I certainly have very little pleasure for my teenage sons, who are more focused on the latest and the greatest. But I'm very content, so, you know, so saved a lot of money, and I'm content with what I have. There's a story from the suttas of a very wealthy man who decided to leave it all behind and become a monk. And when he was staying in the monastery, it was not in the monastery, I think it was in a wooded area where the monastics lived at that time. And the other monks would look at him and regularly and say to themselves, oh, you know, this guy is not going to stay. He's used to a lot of comfort and wealth and pleasure and all kinds of things, luxury, and he's not going to stay in the monastery. He's going to go back to his life. So it was kind of like that was the... So one day, he was off in the woods a little bit deeper in, and he was meditating. And the other monks called him, heard him calling out, happy, 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 I'm so happy. And so they said to each other, you see, he's decided to go back. That was the conclusion. So he came out of the woods and said, well, what's up, bro? And he said, I was sitting there meditating. I was so happy that I didn't have to live under lock and key and have guards for all my possessions. Here I can live out in the woods, I can meditate, and I feel so safe. This is happy. So he wasn't going back to the life he had. So this idea of putting down the burden of comfort, pleasure, so a lot of people associate comfort with safety, and the pursuit of security is certainly important to feel safe. It shouldn't be underestimated how important it is, but it can be a little bit excessive, the pursuit of safety, and so that's all kind of it can be a burden that people live under, a weight in the mind, the preoccupation and concern. So the other one, next one, is the beliefs, the weight of beliefs that people have. I don't know what is heavier, but maybe beliefs are heavier than comfort and pleasure. Most people appreciate that pleasures and comforts come and go and have to be renewed. But beliefs, they can be stuck. They can carry us for a long time. And the opinions we live under, the expectations, the norms we've learned from our family, from our culture, our society, that this is how things should be, that I have to be this way, I have to be a person who is successful in this particular way. I believe that I'm responsible for the welfare of everyone. My Achilles heel, especially when I was younger, was a sense of responsibility. I was just felt like I was, you know, it's up to me, you know, to make everyone happy, and that, you know, is really heavy. You know, it's, you know, that weight of that or the belief that you know, that I have to be liked, or the belief that I have to have a certain degree of financial success, or the belief that I need to hold on to my resentments forever. Otherwise, I don't know what's going to happen, but some belief, the resentments. Some people believe that they have to hold on to their suffering. Some people believe that they have to hold on to their hurt. Some people believe that they have to, that it's useful to spend a lot of time planning, anticipating, worrying about the future. I used to do a lot of that, think ahead and worry about the future. And in my case, one of the things that helped, certainly meditation helped a lot, because through meditation I learned a sense of well-being and stability here that was really a good place to be. But I also learned not to plan and be so concerned, worry so much about the future, when I discovered slowly that my track record for predicting the future was abysmal. That I would kind of have this worry and concern about what was going to happen. And I can't, you know, it was over and over again, It didn't happen the way that it was, you know, I thought it was going to happen. A common scenario was that, I don't know how common it was, but one of the got my attention was the whole thing I was worried about and planning about, concerned with, simply didn't happen. The day would come and it would be canceled or didn't unfold that way. And I was left there, my hands filled with the weight of plans and weapons and shields and tanks and whatever I, you know, I needed. I thought I needed, metaphorically, and like just hold, and you know, like there's no one there to, you know, engage with, and then so anyway, so this idea of, you know, believing I have to plan and to line every all different thing up to be safe is another belief. There's the beliefs about other people, Other people should be a certain way. Other people should treat me a certain way. And, you know, and sometimes those beliefs are a burden and a weight. People should take care of me. Some people, you know, I need to be taken care of. I believe I can't, I need other people to take care of me, and I have to find the people who will take care of me. So these are some of the things that come to my mind sitting here. I mean, there's an infinite number of beliefs people live under and under the weight of. One of the things that's interesting about meditation practice, if the meditation practice can get quiet enough, the mind can get quiet and still, we can see a place in the mind where there are no beliefs, in the sense that the beliefs are not operating. And you can feel the lightness of the mind, the ease of the mind, or the spaciousness of the mind, the health of the mind, when it's not caught in the grip and caught in the weight or being driven by some of the beliefs. And some of these beliefs that we carry are probably subconscious, that they're hard to see them. And so that's part of the function of meditation, is to get the mind quiet enough to start seeing the more subtle underlying beliefs that are often operating, but the mind is involved at a different layer, a coarser layer of thought, to see the deeper kind of beliefs that are underneath that. And this happened certainly for me in meditation. And one of the things I discovered was I had this belief. I saw it in a retreat, and I think it had something to do with kind of how I was thinking about the other people on the retreat. And it was a subtle underlying kind of belief that the grass was greener over there. Like whatever was happening to me in meditation, the people next to me or near me, they were having it better. That was one. Another one that I maybe deeper than that was the idea that if it was happening to me, it was not the real thing. So whatever, you know, meditation experience I have, it didn't really count. It wasn't the real thing because it was happening to me. And, you know, I hadn't even investigated or considered it. It was just kind of like, it was just like, you know, the operating principle of the universe, that if it was happening to me, it wasn't real. It didn't count. It wasn't important. It wasn't something. So it was great to see these things, because when you see them, then there's hope of putting them down. So meditation has the function of revealing some of the beliefs that we operate under, and then showing us how much nicer it is to have the mind operating without it. The lightness that comes, the clarity that comes. But not only that, but also the creativity that can come. Meaning we can tend to be able to respond to the world more creatively, more wiser, if we're not carrying the burden of a lot of beliefs which obscure what's going on. And then there's the weight of obligations and duties. And one of the ways of talking about this, in the, you know, of understanding this in the language of ancient Buddhism, what I'm translating is obligations and duties, is also could be understood as morality and religious observances. I'd like it to be done more broadly, you know, obligations and duties. But, you know, people sometimes have the sense of either religious obligations and duties, sometimes ethical obligations and duties, sometimes familial obligation duties, sometimes social obligations and duties, whatever, all kinds of things that weigh us down. Like, we have to do this. We can't do something else. I have to be this way. And certainly we should be ethical, and certainly it's good to do, you know, some spiritual practices, like meditation or mindfulness or something. They're good things to do. But I've seen among Buddhists, Buddhist practitioners, that even the idea of being ethical and being practicing mindfulness or meditation is taken on as a big weight, big burden. And I have to do this. I'm only a good person if I do this. And some people come to me very apologetic because of what, I guess what I represent as a Buddhist teacher. You know, they kind of whisper, you know, I don't meditate every day. I don't meditate every day, and like, as if they're required, you know, or like that's how they're going to be a good person or something. And so this weight, you know, obligations and duties is another place that people get worn down, strained by. And then the fourth of these weights in the mind is the weight of self. Self-identity, self-preoccupation, conceit, all these kinds of ways in which we orient ourselves in a self-centered way or self-obsessed way. And I have to be this, I have to be that, I am this, I am that. And they're a little bit belong to the world of belief as well. I am this, you know, I'm a lousy person. That's a belief. I don't think the universe was created inherently that anybody was ever lousy. It's just kind of a funny belief of the mind that somehow is there, planted there. And or beliefs that I have needs, that who I am has needs. Beliefs in the self is beliefs in comparative thinking. I'm better than others, I'm worse than others. Beliefs that I'm the center of the universe, like that I'm supposed to get to what I want, or beliefs that I don't count. There's all this kind of swirl of ideas around self that are a big weight, and also about others, self and others. When I was 19, I went traveling in Morocco with a couple of friends, and it was the first time I traveled in a non-Western country. If 19 is an adult, as an adult, but without my parents. And so, you know, I paid attention to the world in a different way. And after a while, being in Morocco for a few weeks, I noticed that there was a lightness in my mind that was unfamiliar to me. Now that's curious. What's that about? And it took me a while to understand what was happening. And what was happening was that the people in Morocco wore, back then, mostly wore non-Western clothes. The men wore robes, for example, yalabas. And so the usual categories that my mind would operate under about who people were couldn't operate. I couldn't put them into my categories that were a burden to carry, were kind of a strain or tension the mind carried. So, but here in America, you know, people, that person's a jock. You know, that person's square. Back then, people were square back when I was young. Now, there's people who work for Square. But, and then, and what else? You know, there was, you know, so I had all, you know, that's a conservative person, that's a, this kind of person, that's a, you know, a hippie, and all these things. And those judgments were more judgments than ideas, created a certain tension in the mind. And because the Moroccans didn't fit into these categories that I use to put people into, you know, to judge people, basically, I wasn't going around judging anyone. And so my mind was lighter, was easier. Wasn't that nice? It took going to Morocco to discover what I was doing in America. And so that put a big question mark when I came back to this country and, you know, what I was doing. And maybe I didn't need to do this so much. Lighten up. So, what's the burdens that, the weights that you carry in your mind? Can you put down your burdens and pick up what is light? And what is it that's light to pick up? In the story, in that fable, it was helping people. And certainly, helping people can be done with a sense of duty. Helping people can be done with a big sense of self. You know, look, I hope everyone notices how helpful I am. Helping people can be done. I don't know if it can be done with a sense of pleasure, attachment to pleasure, but it could certainly be done as obligation and duty and all these things, the weight of it. But how to help people, how to walk through the world and be involved in things which maybe are physically heavy or take time and effort, but so there's a feeling of lightness. The mind is light, the heart is light. How to do something without a sense of obligation. How to do something without maybe automatically connecting it to my self-image and what people will think of me. How to go through the world and do things without needing it to always be pleasant and enjoyable and comfortable what we do. Is there lightness in doing things which are unpleasant? But the joy is the light mind that does it, as opposed to that physically pleasant or unpleasant. And so what are the motivations? What are the activities that we do with lightness? One place that some people can feel some of this is in the privacy of their own homes. Some people, when no one else is watching, can do some things which they do lightly. It doesn't carry a burden. But how to do things when we're together with others. One of the really turning points in my own life was spending a week for the first time. I was then 20 or 21. And it was the first time I spent a week alone on a small farm. And I didn't see anyone except once. I saw the mail carrier down the road in the distance. I didn't see anyone. Taking care of the farm and the cows. And I felt so light and so clear, and my mind felt kind of crystalline in its purity or something, and the world, that my vision was really remarkable. I never had experience of my vision feeling, everything was sparkling, and what was also sparkled was my thoughts. I was so acutely aware of my thoughts in the same sparkly way. And then my friends, the farmers, came home, and then that all disappeared. And what I realized was that the complications of my mind that set in the social interactions made my mind heavier, tighter, more constricted, more agitated, and I lost some of that clarity and some of that peacefulness that I had discovered by myself. And that was without meditating. I just kind of lived a life alone. And so my task then that I set myself to, because I wasn't planning to be a hermit, was how can I be alone with others? How can I have, you know, how could I, not to be aloof with others, but how could I have that kind of way which my mind is open and clear, uncontracted, not made heavy by the social interactions, but have this lightness in it? So I learned some of that by being alone, at least the possibility of it. And how to engage in activity, physical activity with the mind being light. I certainly noticed there are times when the exhaustion that I felt from some of the physical things I've done has come from my resistance to it and my judgments of it and my sense of heaviness and fear connected to it. And I've done things with a lot of physical work, mental work, wholeheartedly a lot, sometimes without a break, and just felt like I was flying. Just felt so wonderful and delighted, and it felt like, you know, play almost. I was just kind of engaged, or I was absorbed in such a nice way that so much happiness arose in the activity. And my mind, when I finished, felt light and open. I don't know if people like this story. My kids didn't like it when I tried telling them. But when I was in college, I would study, you know, hard in the last minute or something, last day for these exams. So I was kind of, you know, pouring in, getting all this, remembering everything that was only had to be remembered for 24 hours. And this expensive education. And then I would go take my, they were, you know, written exams, and I would just pour myself into the exams, just like get really, that's 100% focus, I guess, on the exam, more or less. But what I discovered was a surprise the first times. When I left the exams, I felt so empty, like just my mind had been emptied out and clear and open. I'd come out to the classroom, look outside, and just like marvel at the trees and the environment around me. So I was a strange person who enjoyed taking those exams because of the absorption, the engagement in it. So I guess that didn't work. That story didn't work for my kids. So what brings you lightness? What keeps your mind light? What are the burdens and the weights that you carry? What are the weights that you, burdens you can put down? And what are things you can pick up? What are things you can do? Because we're not supposed to just put everything down and just do nothing. But what can you pick up? Or how can you pick up things that it's light and easy? Lighten the mind. And if it's light in the mind, then it's also going to be pretty easy to put it down. Easy to pick up and easy to put down for the mind. So that's the fable. And fables only become true if you apply it to yourself. So maybe or consider it how it works for you.